and this is a program by Global Voices for Justice. I'm Stuart Hay. The devastating fires of Southern California in late October 2007, especially in San Diego County, scorched 500,000 acres, destroyed 2,300 structures, and displaced several hundred thousand people. This disaster brought two distinct images to mind. The causes were the same as San Diego's 2003 fires, and the government's emergency response was a virtual replica of New Orleans after the Katrina devastation, mostly public relation work by spin doctors, distracting from the inaction of the government through photo ops of state and federal officials with people who had lost their entire livelihood. In this talk by Mike Davis, we will hear another side of the story, one that mainstream media did not want to cover. And at the end, we will provide websites and contact information for donations to the relief effort. Mike Davis is a renowned analyst of environmental issues from a socialist perspective. He's a professor of urban theory and history and teaches at the University of California, Irvine. He is author of many books, including City of Courts, Ecology of Fear, and his most recent, In Praise of Barbarians, published in August 2007.
It's always an honor to speak to San Diego's community of activists, and a great pleasure that you're all here tonight, because we really need to have a dialogue about the events of the last 10 days. And to ensure that we have a real dialogue tonight, I'm going to keep my presentation mercifully brief. It would probably be better to describe me as a deeply hated incendiarist, particularly in certain zip codes north of Santa Monica, and is someone who's grotesquely overpaid as compared to most of the people who do the real work in education in San Diego, high school teachers, my wife who teaches at Mesa College, and so on. But before I talk about, give you my spiel about the fires, I wanted to read a really interesting letter that was sent to me by Paul Harris. Is Paul here tonight? Hi, Paul. Would you stand up for a second? Paul was in the Superdome during Katrina week. He's from here, from San Diego, and he's writing a book about his week. And with his permission, I want to read one of the two letters that he's written to the Union Tribune, because I think they're in some ways the most eloquent and important thing I've heard in the last 10 days. If you don't mind, Paul, I'll read the first letter. Letter to the editor, California Wildfires. While I'm in strong agreement with Robert Caldwell's opinion piece, Tale of Two Cities, in terms of the response to our wildfires being very good overall, I find it preposterous to even try and compare the fires, or more specifically, Qualcomm Stadium to the Superdome. I'm so thankful that lessons were learned and that those at Qualcomm had the comforting, supportive conditions, you know, valet parking, massages, yoga, free autographs. The comforting, supportive conditions, and thankful for the humanitarian spirit there. That was my interpolation, not Paul's. I was a San Diego tourist stuck in the Superdome, and maybe you aren't aware, Mr. Caldwell, that the airport, Amtrak, Greyhound were all closed 2 days prior to the hurricane and before the mandatory evacuation. Many of us had no way out. Maybe you weren't aware that all that 99% of talk of murder and rape in the Superdome was simply rumor. There were deaths inside the Superdome, one suicide and about 10 medical-related deaths, because necessary emergency supplies were prohibited from entering. 98% of us evacuees, or refugees as the press called us, well-behaved and looked out for one another and did our best to survive under horrific conditions. No running water, toilets overflowing at day two of 6 days, 95-degree temperature with 90% humidity, sleeping on urine and feces-soaked cardboard, and a severe lack of National Guardsmen because so many were in Iraq. Maybe you weren't aware that Mayor Nagin was actually stationed next door to the Superdome pretty much 24 hours a day and repeatedly asked for federal assistance. You would now think, of course, that Ray Nagin lives in San Diego. for the frequency with which his name is abused, and he's denounced on certain papers and television channels. Mayor Megan repeatedly asked for federal assistance because, as awful as our wildfires were, they were a drop in the bucket comparison to Katrina and the floods. Roughly 200 times as many people died from Katrina. Roughly 100 times as many homes were lost to Katrina. We're in 2 to 3 feet of water all around the Superdome, so supplies were more difficult to get to us than Mission Valley. Nevertheless, this was a moot point because hundreds of potential rescuers, the Red Cross, churches, and caring citizens with boats were prohibited from entering the city by various state and federal entities. And as corrupt of a political history as New Orleans has, it takes some real nerve on your part to declare that New Orleans possesses far too little of the civic glue that holds communities together. As caring as San Diegans were for one another, I would dare match New Orleans citizens one-on-one with ours any day. Many of us don't even know our neighbors. And as an aside, the most looting I was an eyewitness to, which was overblown by the media, was committed by more well-to-do white individuals. The bottom line is that if the devastation from our wildfires was magnified 10, 20, or in the case of Katrina, 100 times, would you still say it should or could have been handled by our local authorities? Sincerely, Paul Harris. Paul, thank you very much for writing this letter. The most heartbreaking sign I've ever seen in California is at Doghouse Junction, near the summit of Fire Scarred Otay Mountain. Okai is that mountain just south of San Miguel that squats right on the border. The sign is a simple, chilling image of a family desperately fleeing flames. Anyone likely to encounter the sign, which is primarily border patrolmen or their elusive furtive prey, will instantly understand its meaning. People running from fire. People burn here. Otay Mountain and its sister, border-straddling massive to the east, Tecate Peak, offer refuge to unique species of legally protected trees, birds, and butterflies. But the militarization of the border, along with the recent wildfires, have so defaced the landscape that it's very difficult to recognize its underlying natural beauty. True, the sweeping views of San Diego, Tijuana, and their utterly entangled destinies remain superb. But otherwise, Doghouse Junction looks like a NATO fire base in the Pamirs, a crude helicopter landing pad, a bunker. It's actually a relic of World War II, which always, or most of the time I go up to Otay Mountain, there's a mysterious black dog tethered to a chain. And I've never quite understood the meaning of this, whether this is a joke or the dog is actually some supernatural presence that's endowed this place with the name Doghouse Junction. You occasionally see National Guard Humvees and always ever-lurking green and white Migra SUVs. The real Afghanistan, by the way, is located only 20 miles further east of Otay Mountain at La Posta, a mountain warfare training facility where the Navy SEALs based in Coronado have to matriculate before they're deployed to fight the Taliban. San Diego's backcountry apparently looks a lot like Afghanistan. The Otay-Tecate Wilderness has become Tijuana's back door to San Diego. Now that the front door at San Ysidro has been bolted shut by Operation Gatekeeper and the Bush administration's absolutely superlative re-erection of the Berlin Wall, if you look at a roadmap from the perspective of labor migrants, the San Diego Mountains seem an obvious alternative to facing death by first in the Imperial Desert or southern Arizona. The promised land of construction jobs and sweatshops is enticingly close at hand, and a greenhorn would easily underestimate the terrain. In fact, the real choice that migrants face is between furnace and labyrinth. Except when one of their helicopters crash, which occurs actually with a startling frequency, La Migra aren't crazy enough to descend into the treacherous maze of inaccessible canyons and deep ravines through which the coyotes guide their clients. They simply park in the truck trails and wait for people to emerge from the shadows, just like lazy hunters jack-lighting deer. Sometimes they're joined by their unsolicited allies and fans, the Minutemen Project and its feral splinter groups, now including a few gun-toting loners who permanently stalk the border. As we all know, scores of immigrants, or more, have died in recent years in the San Diego Mountains. Some from falls, some from dehydration and sheer exhaustion, some in snowstorms in the higher mountains to the east, and others casually murdered for the ease and profit of their guides. But the most excruciating death, and the one as a lifelong hiker in San Diego and California I've always feared the most, is the wildfire that can suddenly overtake its victims in a few minutes or stalk their desperate running figures for hours before they stumble, writhing into the infernal brush. The border mountains are highly combustible, and 4 years ago, a devastating firestorm, part of the 15-blaze complex that's now officially been dubbed the Fire Siege of 2003 by the state forestry people. One of these blazes scourged Otay Mountain and its rare cypress forest. Those of you who are outdoors types probably know that Otay and Tecate Peak support what ecologists call a refugia. It's a place where the ice age vegetation of the San Diego area has retreated in. And there are these, like the Torrey Pines. These are Tecate cypresses. The only place in the world they exist are on the top of these mountains, and I believe in one location in Baja California, along with lots of other absolutely unusual plants, butterflies. Even the geology is quite extraordinary. The 2003 fire burnt almost all of Otay Mountain. It also burned into the gorge of the Tijuana River. If you've ever taken the tollway from Tijuana to Tecate, it goes through the valley of the Tijuana River. It's actually quite gorgeous and very striking place. All this burnt. But the 2003 fire spared the terrain to its east. Most of Tecate Peak and the series of small valleys and mountains, you know, Potrero, that stretch further east through Barrett Lake, Marino, toward Campbell, and ultimately Acumba. But on Sunday, October 21st, exactly as predicted by most meteorologists, gale-force Ana winds produced an eerie reprise of the 2003 conflagration. And I'm sure you've probably seen these satellite images, stunning images of 15 giant smoke columns blown far out into the Pacific. Indeed, from space, all of Southern California, from Point Doom south, seemed to be sending smoke signals to the moon. Yet from most newsrooms and editorial desks, which might as well be on the moon, only the celebrity evacuations in Malibu and later the mass exodus of population from the affluent, heavily Republican suburbs in northern San Diego County were deemed worthy of bold black headlines. The Harris Fire, centered on the Tecate-Potrero Valley area, in a largely blue-collar backcountry in which I grew up, that has been stereotyped for decades as San Diego's Appalachia, as well as an infamous immigrant corridor. The Harris Fire tended to rate only whispers and grudging end-of-article references in the Southern California media, particularly when it approached that very expensive community that replaced what was once the beautiful the San Miguel Ranch or the Monte Vista Ranch right there at Hamishoe Junction. You started seeing a lot more news about the Harris Ranch when it got near, what is it, San Diego Estates or something like that that's been built there. I tend to cover my eyes when I drive by. Yet the greatest and most gruesome human tragedy, the fire wake, took place in the early hours of the Harris Fire on Sunday. West of Potrero and along the flanks of Tecate Peak. First, on the southeast side, the fire roared with little warning into the U.S. hamlet of Tecate, the little cluster of houses on the side. Tecate, of course, is now the Mexican side, a big city. But this is the customs post and a few homes. It came in so fast that the immigration officials at the gate actually had to flee for their lives. And a middle-aged man, Thomas Varshark, was burnt to death while saving the life of his teenage son. And somewhere in the vicinity, and I've been unable to find the exact location. It doesn't seem to have been reported yet. Four firefighters trying to make a stand were overrun by the flames. I think they're all still in UCSD burn ward, one of them in critical condition. But at the same time, or possibly a little earlier, possibly a little later, but on Sunday, on the northern flanks of Tecate Peak, near Barrett Junction on Highway 94, the fire front engulfed what has been variously described as either a migrant camp or a large group of immigrants crossing the border. Perhaps it was both. 11 people, hideously burned, managed to reach the highway, Highway 94, or were later discovered by the Border Patrol. They're hospitalized still at the UCSD Medical Center's burn ward, the only such facility we possess in San Diego County, by the way. Four of them, including a married couple from Guerrero, a young man from Guerrero, and a guy from Chiapas, remain in critical condition, desperately fighting for their lives. They were found on Sunday. On Thursday, Border Patrol agents discovered four charred bodies, three men and a woman, either in the same area or, because the press accounts differ, possibly closer to Del Zura, which would be on the reburnt northern flank of Otay Mountain. And the remains of yet more victims may be discovered in the coming weeks in these funeral pyres of Chaparral and Oak. The number of the injured, probably much higher than what has so far been acknowledged in the English-language press. Yesterday, La Pinon reported, after talking to the California Office of Emergency Services and a Border Patrol spokesman, that, quote, at least 50 of the 130 people injured by the fire were undocumented immigrants, found by the Border Patrol, quote. Indeed, the brief abandonment of the border post at Tecate, when the agents were forced to flee from the flames, apparently set off a high-level red alert. And about 100 National Guardsmen and some Border Patrol were quickly dispatched to bring to reseal the border. According to the Los Angeles Times, 26th of October, quote, more than 200 migrants in the area, some, quote, smoked out of the ravines, were arrested by agents. So there were mass arrests, at least 200 people. Tijuana Papers, El Mexicano, reports that Grupos Beta, the elite Mexican police who patrol the border, rescued 50 other people who were trapped by flames. The fire burnt into the Mexican side of the flanks of Tecate Peak. At the same time, immigration agents became conspicuous at fire zone roadblocks throughout the county. Now, allied with the threat of the Witch Creek fire, as it moved from the backcountry toward the coast, mainly down the channel or the corridor of the San Gigito River, that threat combined with the MIGRA presence and whatever else happened, and hoping maybe Justin or perhaps people in the audience can clarify this and add new information to it. But in any event, it seems to have at least temporarily scoured the canyons east of I-5 and the Encinitas-Carlsbad area of their long-established populations of gardeners and farm workers, people that Lewis Hawk here from UCSD has been chronicling for 25 years now, several thousand people at least who live in these canyons. Thus, the fire combined with the MIGRA presence achieved the same local ethnic cleansing for which angry homeowners and San Diego nativists have been clamoring for so long. It was also reported to La Pinon by El Comité Amigos Americanos de San Diego that many farm workers, mostly indigenous Oaxaqueños, in the Rancho Penasquitas area, not only were not evacuated from the path of the fire at the time when everybody else was fleeing their SUVs to L.A. or to at Qualcomm, not only not evacuated, but were ordered to keep picking tomatoes. Which brings back to me images of during the last fire, during the Cedar fire, Jim Miller and Kelly Mayhew, who I'm sure many of you know, teach at City College and were my co-authors in a book about San Diego. We were desperate to find a place to run, so we decided to drive up to run on in the beach in San Clemente. And, of course, as you drove up, if you recall, those who remember the 2003 fire, it was just like this fire. It was just acrid, choking smoke and ash along the coast. And as we're driving up, we looked out the window, and there are the people that you always see between Carlsbad and Oceanside working in, I think, whatever it is, the strawberry patch. So let me try and summarize this horror. You have at least four immigrants burnt to death, as well as one resident of Tecate. You have at least four immigrants who are presently right now close to death, along with one of the four injured firefighters. You have seven other immigrants who are in the burn ward, several dozen more reported injured, hundreds arrested, and perhaps 1,000 or several thousand driven out of their informal housing. So let me repeat. This is the central human tragedy of the recent fires. But how has it been reported in local media? If such a thing as a negative Pulitzer Prize existed, it would undoubtedly be won by the heroic San Diego Union Tribune, whose headline last Thursday warned, quote, "Criminals use fire to their advantage." The inflammatory first paragraph of this article by Chet Barfield read, "Burglaries of evacuated homes, cars belonging to residents who are fleeing the fires being broken into, thieves stealing supplies to relief victims." What image springs to your mind? The same kind of things that were said about New Orleans. But Barfield, as is so often typical of Union Tribune reporters, provided no evidence whatsoever of widespread looting. Indeed, he relied strictly on what he admitted were anecdotes emailed to the Union Tribune. And if you read the Union Tribune email responses, you know what those tend to be like. The case of one Tribune reporter who claimed that her evacuated home had been burglarized, and two cases, reported cases in the Ramona area. And when Barfield asked San Diego police spokesman Monica Munoz about the crime wave, she told him, quote, "The department had had no official reports of fire-related burglaries. Although five arrests have been made since Sunday for minor violations such as interfering with an officer or being in a restricted area." Five arrests? This deserves black bold type and headlines designed to scare us out of our pants. So Barfield's last resort, his final card, was to write the following. "However, six people were caught stealing relief supplies yesterday from Qualcomm Stadium. An evacuee reported seeing them load two pickups in a car with cots and other items, leave and then return." Quote, unequivocal. He doesn't say alleged to have stolen. He says caught stealing. So the UT, together with the local television stations, owned by Rupert Murdoch, or as in the case of KSUI, you ever wonder why you see Duncan Hunter all the time on KSUI? His campaign manager owns the station. So the UT and the yellow TV stations then proceeded to give large quantities of gasoline to the internet arsonists who were busy spreading bogus tales of Mexicans with Molotov cocktails and Mecha burning Orange County. With these wildly inaccurate tale of Mexicans looting Qualcomm Stadium. In fact, as La Pinon, the infinitely more responsible Spanish language daily in Los Angeles, pointed out, the actual incident was a misunderstanding over diapers, no less, although it led to several deportations by conveniently available immigration agents. The following Sunday, last Sunday, Bob Kittle tried to exculpate his paper from the mess it had created with a remarkable editorial that concluded that the events in Qualcomm were a muddle. And like Werner Heisenberg discovering the principle of uncertainty in quantum physics, he said that nobody really knew whether or not anything had been stolen, nor for that matter whether any of the illegal aliens had started any of the fires. That might yet turn out to be the case. It might not be. We just don't know. This is all about, allegations and scare headlines that originated in the UT itself. But if Kittle had doubts about whether there were looters in Qualcomm or the city was being struck by a crime wave, the UT had no doubts at all about the larger meaning of the Holocaust in Tocati Mountain. Yesterday, in an article titled 11 and 18 in Burn Unit Undocumented, UCSD cases put focus on who pays for care, reporters Cheryl Clark and Leslie Berenstein emphasized the burden that emergency care for undocumented immigrants imposes on local hospitals and taxpayers. And they gave a pulpit to Mark Krikorian, the spokesman for an anti-immigrant group, who railed against the Mexican government, whom he claimed should pay for any injury, quote, to people who are sneaking across the border at the time of injury and clearly don't have any business here. The article, and this was the first separate piece, first time UT had printed more than a paragraph about the people who were died, burned, injured, and arrested in the Harris fire. It was just astonishing, and it was utterly despicable. What are we to believe? Local taxpayers and long-suffering health maintenance organizations are the true victims of the fire? Badly burned Mexicans cost us money? It's not surprising that the right-wing blog sphere immediately was filled with hosannas to the UT, revealing that at last we knew the secret of unaffordable health care in the United States. In fact, what this kind of article exposes is the real meaning of the stolid middle-class values that the UT has been celebrating for the last 10 days. And every Republican from the president on down to the Republican dog catcher has been celebrating with big smiles, turning this whole tragedy into a campaign rally. But the real values are the bigotry, the selfishness, and the manipulated rage that glue together Republican ideology from Rancho Santa Fe to the White House. If there was ever a time for San Diego progressives to unite and fight against the Copley monopoly, and of course KPBS is virtually a non-profit division of the Union Tribune, you can hear Bob Kittle giving us what we should believe is even more frequently in KPBS than in the editorial pages of the Union Tribune. To fight against the Copley monopoly, against the corrupt Republican establishment that pins medals on itself for its supposed leadership in allowing almost 4,000 homes to burn in the last 4 years, and against the invisible government of billionaire developers whose greed puts us all in harm's way. I mean, the time to do that is now. The pain of the 1,100 or so families who lost homes, but with only two exceptions, did not lose lives, and the largely affluent suburbs affected by the Witch Creek fire, should not be used as an excuse to blot out the deeper tragedy, the Harris fire, or obscure the trampling of human rights by federal and local officials. It is intolerable to think that the only monument to the Harris victims will be that sinister little sign on the top of Otay Mountain. Thank you.
You've been listening to a program by Global Voices for Justice. This talk by Mike Davis and Justin Akers Chacon on the San Diego fires was given at the City Heights Recreation Center in East San Diego, California, on November 1st, 2007. To read articles by Mike Davis and Justin Akers Chacon on the San Diego fires, visit socialistworker.org, The Nation Magazine, Z Magazine, and London Review of Books. To make a donation to the relief efforts, please visit www.borderangels.org or mail to P.O. Box 86598, San Diego, California 92138. That's P.O. Box 86598, San Diego, California 92138. This is Stuart Hay. Global Voices for Justice is a nonprofit media organization in Los Angeles, California. To contact us or obtain copies of this or other programs, please visit our website at globalvoicesforjustice.org or call us at 323 323-850-4464. That's 323-850-4464. Our music is by The Magic Bullet Theory, a local group in Long Beach, California. Thanks for listening.